And joining us today on Perspectives is Steve Martini. Steve is the author of numerous New York Times bestsellers, including Traitor of Secrets, The Rule of Nine, Guardian of Lies, Shadow of Power, and others featuring defense attorney Paul Modigliani. Martini has practiced law in California in both state and federal courts and has served as an administrative law judge and supervising hearing officer. He lives currently in the Pacific Northwest, and he is joining us today to talk about his latest novel, Steve Martini's The Enemy Inside. And as I mentioned before, this features Paul Modigliani as one of the main characters. If you've read some of the other novels, you are familiar with Paul and some of the adventures that he's had before. Thank you, Steve, very much for being with us here today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Now, first of all, as I mentioned, you know, your background as an attorney and working as a judge and as a hearing officer, tell us a little bit about your interest in writing. Have you always been interested in storytelling, writing, or reading since you were a child?
Yeah, I wrote poetry when I was a kid, okay? I wasn't an avid reader as a child. That developed later. But I was a newspaper reporter, a journalist, and crunching on daily deadlines in my early 20s, I guess, and did it for about 10 years. And that becomes infectious. I don't know if it's a curse or a blessing, but there was something therapeutic about beating on a keyboard and making words. And so it started there. And I went to law school at night while I was doing that. I was reporting in Los Angeles for a legal newspaper, and they sent me up to Sacramento to be their capital correspondent. And while I was in Sacramento, I went to law school at night and for 4 years. And when I finished law school, I took the bar, passed it, remained with the paper for a brief period of time, and then ultimately went into the practice of law. But I always felt like I left something behind. And the consequence was, since I couldn't write for a newspaper any longer, I couldn't meld the schedule of news coverage in with my legal commitments. So I started writing fiction on the side in my spare time, and that's how my career came about.
It's interesting what you mentioned about kind of, I guess if you want to call it a high or that adrenaline rush that you get when you're meeting a deadline. And people don't understand unless they've been there, but it seems like we thrive on that. And then if we don't have a deadline, we're going like, something is wrong here because I'm not worrying about anything and I'm supposed to be worrying. And not that we're worrying, but we want to get that done. And in your novels, I believe that some of your characters kind of follow that because they want to feel that rush. They want to try and get in trouble and just stay low on the radar. And Paul Modigliani, it's interesting when you read at the beginning, it gives us a little bit of history about the fact that he was the target of a cartel leader. And it's very topical because of some of the stuff that's going on in Mexico right now and on the border.
Yeah, it is. In fact, I've had a lot of readers write to me and ask me questions about how I knew the NSA, for example, was listening in on all of our telephone conversations and doing the metadata thing. I didn't know it, but I read between the lines. I'm a news junkie. I always have been. I'm addicted to it. And I read tremendous volumes of news material daily, and it's where the ideas for stories and subplots comes from. So, I mean, I read stories about tunnels being dug under the border and, you know, different things like this. And so you take it and you fictionalize and you embellish upon the actual facts. And pretty soon you have at least a major theme for a novel, not necessarily the entire novel, but major parts of it. And so, yeah, I do. I basically ingest that stuff, process it. Some of it I throw out. Some of it I put on a back burner and use it in future books. And some of it goes into the current work that I'm working on.
We are having a conversation with Steve Martini. Steve is New York Times bestselling author. The latest novel is The Enemy Inside, and it's an interesting story. It features Paul Modigliani, the attorney, some of you are familiar with, if you're familiar with Steve's work. And Alex Ives, a young man, needs help when he's accused of vehicular homicide. And, you know, it seems like, well, where is this story going? But immediately it takes off and it takes you through a lot of curves, a lot of places, and a lot of interesting characters. And I have to ask you this, Steve, when you create a character like you did in Paul, is this something that perhaps, you know, you have to remember? Did I do this in an earlier book? Do I have to add this as one of his traits? Or sometimes people will pick up the book and find out, hey, I didn't know this about Modigliani.
You normally have to pick up the threads of his background a little bit. because readers basically will often start in the middle of a series. So you can't assume they know anything about this character. So you have to fill in the blanks about his background, about Harry's background, Harry Hines, his partner, and allow the reader basically to treat this as a standalone novel. Okay, so you always start with that. And if you don't do it, your editor will remind you to do it during the editing process. So that's part of the given when you write a novel. In terms of Paul, I think he's pretty much as he has been throughout the novels. The only difference is he never ages. You know, I've gotten older, but he stayed the same. So he's a picture of Dorian Gray, I guess. And but in any event, it's you know, his background is pretty well set at this point. I guess I know him as well as I know myself, and he's not me. He is a composite character. But it's, you know, at one point he was stopping to make telephone calls at, people have asked me this, you know, stopping to make telephone calls at payphones, you know, way back when I first started writing, and now he's got a smartphone, you know, so how can he still be 40 years old, you know? So I can't answer that question, but it's like compressing a trial. A trial often takes a year or two to actually litigate the case, but my cases all take place in a fortnight. So you've got that to deal with, too. So you have to get the reader to suspend disbelief in certain areas and accept certain things. And part of it is accepting your character.
And some of the things that you bring up in the book, since you mentioned cell phones, the fact that, you know, people are spying or bugging Paul and his buddy without them knowing it because of cell phones. And so you may or may not introduce the reader to something that they were not aware of. So if someone is, I guess, paranoid or very concerned about their safety, or I don't want to say safety, that's too harsh of a word, but just privacy, they may say, well, I didn't know you could do that. And you do a very good job in introducing them and guiding them. So it doesn't have to be someone who knows IT in and out, someone who really understands electronics. Anybody can read this and just say, wow, that's pretty interesting.
Technology is an area that I'm sort of addicted to it, okay? I not only use it, but I find it fascinating how it works. And the downsides, the dark downsides of technology. I mean, it's a blessing and a curse in many respects. But there are very real reasons for us to fear some of these things. You know, I don't worry about the government listening in on my telephone conversations or even extracting my emails and reading them. I mean, it may be offensive because it invades my privacy, but do I have anything really to hide that would be menacing to me? No. Okay, most people don't, all right? But that's not the issue. The issue is, if they can do it to me, they can do it to other people. If they can do it to other people, they can do it to important people. That is, people who have real governmental powers, for example, who can then be extorted because there are dark sides in their lives, dark corners that they don't want revealed. And if people in positions of power and intelligence agencies can suck up this information and find out about it, they can use it for nefarious means, okay, for nefarious ends. And that's the real danger that I see in many of these areas. I don't want the NSA tapping members of the Supreme Court, okay, and listening in on their private conversations or their private emails, okay, because there may be things said there that they feel are compromising and that could be used to force them to vote certain ways in seminal cases, okay? That's a real danger to all of us. And so that's really the threat in terms of that area, the privacy area of technology. There are other fears as well, and there are developed in The Enemy Inside, the latest book. That is the self-driving vehicles, okay? We're in the rudimentary stages of it right now. But those technologies, while they're very convenient and can be very helpful, also have a downside to them if they can be hacked, okay? They can be dangerous. So that threat is also developed in this story.
We're visiting with Steve Martini. Steve is the only New York Times bestselling author of the recent book, The Enemy Inside. Steve, one of the things that perhaps other people may have read about it or not, but a lot of the attorney or legal thrillers that we read about from either Grisham or we hear about, you know, the good guy or the defense attorney or sometimes the prosecutor. But here you introduce us to the other side of the law, and that's a criminal attorney. And Paul kind of lets us know a little bit about, you know, how difficult it is to practice on that side, because basically you're seen as the bad guy.
not only are you seen as the bad guy in many cases, but you've got the monumental power of the state, you know, arrayed against you. They have unlimited resources. They have access to large police agencies in terms of doing investigations. You know, defending a case is a mountain to be climbed like writing a book, okay? And it's a real chore. And most defense attorneys, you're not talking about the dream team here. You know, you're not talking about defending a celebrity who has unlimited resources and can hire untold numbers of expert witnesses and other expert lawyers to come in and assist, okay? In many cases, Paul and Harry are small practitioners. They basically have to do it on their own with the assistance of one hired investigator that they use. And so they end up doing a lot of their own investigations, and that's how the stories unfold for me. I've made a conscious effort to try and extract some of the more recent stories from the courtroom so we get away from the talking heads and get down to more of an unfolding suspense or thriller story where you can see it through the eyes of the attorneys who are investigating along with their investigator. And there will be, you know, there's legal procedures that are tied into the story to keep the book moving, but much of it is unfolds during the investigative stage before they ever get to trial in this case. Yeah.
We're visiting with Steve Martini. Steve is New York Times bestselling author. His recent novel is The Enemy Inside. And basically, it's a story that unfolds with a young man, Alex Ives, and he needs Paul Modigliani's help when he's accused of vehicular manslaughter in the death of a Washington, D.C. attorney. And basically, all Ives can remember is that he had one drink at the party, and then he doesn't remember anything else. So it seems like, as Steve mentioned earlier, all the cards are stacked against him, and especially the state of California. But with Paul's help and his defense team, some of these people are able to come up with some incredible things that the other side has been doing. And you introduce us to one of the characters, and that's the young lady, Olinda Serna. Tell us about her, Steve.
She's a power player in Washington. She works for a very large law firm. She has her own agenda. She's climbing the rungs within that law firm. It's a very competitive situation between her and one of the other senior partners. But she is more than a legal practitioner. She's a political advisor and a money madam. That is, she knows where the money comes from to fuel political campaigns. She knows where the bodies are buried. She knows a lot of secrets that powerful people in Washington would rather be kept secret. And so that's her background. And as the story opens, basically, the reader doesn't know this. And they don't know, for example, that Alex has a history with this woman. That is, he knows who she is. He's, in fact, been doing an undercover investigation for the blog site that he writes, the political blog site that he writes for. But he didn't know that she was in the other car. He didn't know any of the events surrounding the accident because he was effectively unconscious at the time of the accident, and it's explained why and how he got that way and why the police don't pick up on it.
And there's another character that you introduce us to in the story, and this lady is incredible. She's like one person, you know, dynamic duo, trio, whatever. And if you wouldn't mind telling us about her, first of all, she's upset because some high-tech equipment that she ordered is not being shipped, but rather being used right in front of her eyes.
Correct. This deals with the self-functioning portions of vehicles, modern-day automobiles. And Ana Aguirre is a lady who comes out of the mountains of Spain, basically the Pyrenees, and she has a long history. Her parents had a long history of being rebels. She basically has been hired because of her forensic skills and her abilities to make a intentional homicide look like an accident. And she does this professionally. She's paid very well for it. She takes care of her immediate family by doing this kind of work. She travels all over the world. And one of the devices that she has developed, okay, because of connections that she has in the mercenary world, is a high-tech device, basically, that can hack into vehicles and take over, for example, the self-parking mechanisms in modern cars. It can lock doors and trap people inside of cars. It has this ability. She's developed this device, and she intends to use it, but before she can use it, it gets out of her control into the hands of others who use it. And she's very concerned because she paid a very high price for these materials. But what she's really fearful of is that if, in fact, they use this and they are caught with it, the equipment itself might be traced back to her, and she could be in trouble. So she has to get this, she has to recover this equipment and do it quickly before authorities basically end up looking for her.
So I've told a little bit about the plot of the story, but if you wouldn't mind kind of taking us through the steps, of course, without, you know, revealing the ending, so that people can go out and not only purchase this book, but all the accompanying books as well. As you mentioned, though, it is a standalone book, and this is Steve Martini's The Enemy Inside. Go ahead, Steve.
Well, basically, as stated earlier, it starts with a vehicular manslaughter case, a drunk driving case, which appears to be quite benign as something like that can be, and develops rather rapidly into it becomes quite evident to Paul that there's more to this story than meets the eye. And so basically he has to find out exactly what Olinda Cerna was involved in, because he senses that she wasn't killed in an accident. In fact, he suspects she may have been killed before she was placed in the vehicle and before the collision occurred, but he can't prove any of that because the body was burned. And in any event, so the story unfolds, and it becomes of, you know, follow the money, basically. The seeds of this story flowed from my reading of news stories that dealt with American taxpayers using offshore accounts to conceal sums of money from the taxing authorities in this country. And there was a whistleblower who was involved in that actual case who had turned state's evidence. He was a young employee who worked for one of the big offshore banks. And he cooperated with the government. They were quite happy to have his cooperation. At one point, he became a little too helpful, and that is he started revealing that there may well have been some powerful politicians. He didn't say whether they were at the federal or state levels, but he was willing to reveal their identities if the government was interested. They weren't interested. In fact, they made it quite clear in a roundabout way. They charged the individual, the whistleblower, with failing to cooperate with their investigation. They incarcerated him for a period of time. And shortly after that, they struck a deal with him. That is, they paid him a huge sum of money, millions of dollars, out of the whistleblower's fund on the monies recovered from the taxpayers that they did snag. And but there was a settlement agreement made when they paid him the money, and basically he clammed up and said nothing more after that. So I took that thread of a news story and fictionalized around it and filled in the gaping blanks that were left with my novel. And what would happen, for example, if it was revealed that there were politicians that had numbered accounts in Switzerland, for example? And the question arises immediately, where did the money come from? That's the issue. When you have private taxpayers, you don't really have that question. All you really have is how much money's there and how much tax is owing on it, okay? But when you have public officials who have numbered accounts offshore, okay, and they haven't revealed them to the tax man, it's not so much the taxes that you're concerned about. The question is, what was the source of the money and why was it paid? Okay, were they being bribed by foreign governments? Were they being bribed by foreign corporations? And what price has America paid for this, for these acts? Okay, because they may have been conducting official acts in return for monies paid. So therein lies the real mystery of this book. And it was interesting because this story was written and basically locked in type probably close to a year ago now, not quite maybe, long before any of the Hillary Clinton stuff broke, and the question arose as to, monies being paid by, entities overseas, and was there something in return for this money being paid? So it's quite topical in that regard. It has nothing to do with her, my story, but the subject matter itself is topical. So basically that's the story as it unfolds. It also involves intelligence or retired intelligence agents who have built huge businesses basically out of what they know from the intelligence arena and made vast sums of money from this. It deals with China. It deals with the Spratly Islands, the desire for oil. Very topical again. They're building artificial islands in the middle of the South China Sea now to claim this area. All of that basically is included in this story. Before those islands were even built, I was dealing with that subject matter. So it's people write and they say, "How can you do this? Because you're predicting events that occur 6 months after you've written this stuff." And if you read the news closely, history basically unveils in a certain direction. It unfolds in a certain direction. If you read current events, oftentimes you can, and you write about it, you can oftentimes find a parallel course with things that are going to happen in the very near future. So I'm not surprised by any of it.
We're visiting with Steve Martini. Steve is a New York Times bestselling author. Most recent novel is The Enemy Inside. It's a Paul Modigliani novel. Now, Steve, as you mentioned, with technology, anything can happen and it can change. And what you write today may be outdated by next week. And as you mentioned, people might say, well, that can't really happen, or that didn't happen. But all of a sudden, they're going, wait a minute, I remember reading about this in this novel, and this is exactly what's going on. So in addition to all your research that you're doing, and what may be fiction at some point actually turns out to be true?
Yeah, that's the point. It is a strange thing, but it's true. You know, it's I suspect that intelligence analysts who read voluminous amounts of material to try and pick out the gems that are in there in terms of actionable intelligence often find this to be the case as well. They may make predictions based upon what they know is happening today, some of which will prove to be false, but some of which will prove to be amazingly accurate a year or two down the road. Okay, so in some ways, you can say I'm writing intelligence reports in the form of a novel. Okay, because of the research involved, and that has proven to be the case in the last two or three novels, in particular. The earlier courtroom novels, not so much, but in the last two or three novels, much of the technology that I wrote about has come to pass. Okay. And we now know that self-driven cars, for example, are just over the horizon, according to all reports. We know that, there was a close call with an asteroid that passed by the Earth, okay, a few days ago. When they say close call, it was 6.5 million miles away. But one of the stories that I wrote a few years ago dealt with what if you could capture one of these and somehow put a propulsion device on it and use it as a weapon, okay, so that you could steer this thing, maybe the size of a small mountain, okay, toward a specific target on the Earth in order to basically decimate an enemy or an adversary. It would be the perfect weapon because it would basically destroy itself. It would vaporize when it hit the Earth, but especially traveling at 50,000 miles an hour. But it would be almost untraceable back to the source of the culprit, the nation state that did this, or the terrorist state that did this. So it is the perfect weapon. It's not a nuclear bomb that you could trace the trajectory of the missile and go back to its origins. So it's the absolute perfect weapon for avoiding accountability. So a lot of those topics basically are threaded through my novels, and I suspect that in time we're going to see some of this stuff develop.
We're visiting with Steve Martini. Steve is New York Times bestselling author. His latest novel is The Enemy Inside. Steve, our listeners would be wondering, what does Steve Martini like to read? What is he reading now, or what has he read in the past?
I read fiction, but not often. Part of the problem with reading other fiction writers is their voice tends to creep into your work. I found that to be the case. I was reading an Elmore Leonard novel at one point, and I started to sound like Elmore Leonard in terms of the dialogue and some of the other things that I was writing, and people noted that. They picked up on it. I had some reviewers comment on it. The only difference was my story turned very dark at an early stage, which wasn't Leonard's style. But I don't do that very often. I try to avoid it. I read a lot of history and biography, and I tend to glean character traits from reading biographies. History replays itself over and over and over again, so the best story plots basically come from historical events in the past. So, and I enjoy reading this stuff anyway. I'm addicted to it.
Well, I guess that you can't help but perhaps, finding the writing of somebody else or the ideas coming up, regardless of what you do, whether you're watching television and all of a sudden you find yourself doing something the TV actor did or the guy in the movie. And I kind of thought about that when you were introducing us to Mr. Prophet, because his first name sounds like a character out of one of the Grisham novels from Mississippi. It's not a very common name, but we want to also let our audience know, where can they go to find out more information about you, Steve? Do you have a Facebook page? Do you have an author's page?
I have a website, and everything is keyed to that. We do have a Facebook connection, and we do have we tweet. And but the website is stevemartini.com. All the books are listed there in the order in which they were written. There's a synopsis of each book. This includes the series books as well as the standalone novels. There's information on the two television miniseries, the network miniseries that were done. And there's also a novella and a short story. There's some other things that are in there as well. Two short stories, yeah.
Well, Steve, we want to thank you very much for taking the time to be with us here today. We've been visiting with Steve Martini, New York Times bestselling author, his latest work, The Enemy Inside. Steve, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.